Welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. We hope that you all had a great week. We sure did. We've got another special show today, and my co-host, Tim Moore, is going to introduce Carol Carter.
Well, as you all know, we try to bring people onto this show who are emblematic of the tagline of this show, which is creating a life that matters. And today we have Carol Carter, and I've known Carol since, we shouldn't probably name the date, right, Carol? And although Carol is younger than me, so it's not as problematic for her as it is for me. But Carol's the author of 20 books aimed at helping young people succeed in school, college, career, and life. And those books have been purchased by millions of students around the world. But she's also the founder of something called LifeBound, and she'll tell us about that along the way. And she's also the founder of something called Global Minded as well. So Carol, that's a lot of stuff. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I have to share that Tim was my manager at one point. So Tim, probably the productivity and the ability to do some of these other things later in life came from working with you when I was a young marketing manager.
Well, I doubt that that's true, Carol, because I've known you long enough to know that you didn't need any help from me, quite honestly. And you also know that I'm not falsely modest. Carol is a dynamo. Carol, you left Prentice Hall. Maybe we were Pearson by then, but I think you said it was Prentice Hall at that time. I guess you'd written your first student success book, but did you feel like at the time that you were taking a risk? I mean, what was going through your mind? What were you thinking? Well, because you were doing something that was not typical, even in the 94 or 5 when you left.
Well, and my first book I started writing in 1987. That was called Major in the Rest of Your Life, Career Right. Secrets for College Students, and that was a trade book. And I really didn't tell anybody I was writing that book. And actually, a couple people I did tell were like, you don't have your master's degree. How could you possibly publish that book? And I said, well, because I think I'm going to share some things that aren't widely known that college freshmen need to know about. So that was really intended, that first book, to share what my older brothers had shared with me. I had 4 older brothers. I was the trailer child of these World War II parents that got pregnant in their late 40s with this child they weren't expecting, which was me. And I had a lot of wisdom from my brothers that I wanted to share in that first book. And so that opened a lot of doors in that the publisher for our Strauss and Giroux at the time was run by Roger Strauss. He thought of the title of the book. And they sent me out to college campuses. So I went to UT Austin. I went to Ohio State University. A lot of the different Big Ten schools around this topic of how do students major in the rest of their lives? How do they learn about their gifts, their talents, and their abilities? And, you know, in many ways, Tim, when I was at Prentice Hall during that time, This was sort of like something that was all mine that I could just control.
That's good point.
And, you know, being in the big company, you know, there were a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that you felt like no matter what you were doing, it was hard to control some of those things. And so this just became a little oasis for me to feel like I was moving the ball forward. And it gave me some perspective that when things were frustrating at work, I could say, well, this is my little happy place. And then I felt more balanced. I could come back to work and take on some of the bigger challenges that we were facing at the time.
Carol, you couldn't,
so that was my, my
been,
first book.
You couldn't have been much older when you were going out to those colleges with your first book than the kids that you were trying to help. That's kind of remarkable, isn't it?
I was a few years older.
Yeah.
I was a few years older. I was 25. I think.
Oh, excuse me. And when did you write the second book, Carol? That would be in the mid-90s, right?
So the second book was actually the Career Toolkit. Mm-hmm. And Priscilla McGeehan and Dennis Hogan were like, hey, look, you know, you like to write books and we're a publisher. You're working for a publisher. So what if you wrote something for us? And at the time, I knew that because I wasn't an academic and I wasn't affiliated with a college, that I wouldn't necessarily be, you know, welcomed or perceived in the same way. But I knew that within the community college space, there were certain people doing badges and credentials and certificate programs, even during that time, who could really benefit from some of those insights as to how to progress professionally. So that was a book called The Career Toolkit, and that was published, I believe, in 92. And that led to a high school version of that book that was used, still used with some apprenticeship programs and, you know, students that are in CTE courses. So anyway, that became, you know, sort of its own thing, the Career Toolkit. And then after that, you know, again, people are like, well, is there anything else? And I really could see, I had gone to some different conferences because of majoring in the rest of your life. And I went to the Freshman Year Experience Conference and I thought, wow, all these people talk to freshmen about the freshman year. But really, how do freshmen think about things? They don't really think like that. Academic people and people at colleges think like that. But students think about, why am I here? What is this college education going to do for me? What am I going to do with the rest of my life? What am I ready for professionally? What am I interested in? And so we came up with this idea of this book called The Keys to Success, How to Achieve Your Goals in College, Career, and Life. And we were the first people to put those three words together in 1995. And what we did was marry learning skills with practical and professional skills. And that is not always what colleges are so adept at helping young people with. And that's why right. Gallup says 43% of our grads are not in jobs commensurate with their education, mm-hmm, even mm-hmm. today. So you have people spending a lot of money for college, but not coming out with the practical intelligence and the know-how to go to a company and add value the way, you know, Tim and you and I were able to do that right out of college. And then we were on what I call promotion pathways, where every few years we were able to be given more and more responsibility. And with that responsibility came greater earning power. And so that is part of what needs to happen with a college degree. And that's been so much what I've been focused on really since that time. And I ended up spending 17 years with Prentice Hall and Pearson before I left in 2001 to start my own company, LifeBound. So I do feel like I had, you know, kind of a long run as a corporate person, even though I was always more of an entrepreneur within that big 40,000 person environment.
No, you were. Carol, you know, you were connecting some dots 25 or 30 years before people were connecting some of the dots that you mentioned today that that they're connecting. You were, you know, it's funny to say this, but you were ahead of your time. How did you do that? Why were you able to connect these dots? Now, I know that you're going to say you went to some conferences and learned some stuff and all that's true, but part of it is a way of thinking, isn't it? And how were you thinking that made you different? Because you were clearly different.
I think a big piece of that, Tim, is that I grew up around much older people. I grew up spending a lot of time with grandparents. My parents were much older. And we had a big financial crisis when I was in fifth grade. My father, who was in World War II, he was lieutenant commander of the USS Dyson. He had lost his only brother at age 14, who was in a bobsled accident. His dad, during the Depression, had lost his hardware store. So this was a person, by the time he was 32, had more lifelong stress than most people over their entire lives. And he and my mom got married, and he was a furniture manufacturer's representative. But my second brother had really serious asthma, and there was nothing they could do to help my brother. They went to all the clinics. They even went to acupuncture in the 50s. Long and short is they had to move from Kansas City, where they were from, to Tucson for my brother's health. And when that happened, my dad, a couple of years later, he lost his job. And he ended up, between the time I was in third and fifth grade, having a series of three nervous breakdowns. So we went from being kind of middle class to really not having money to go on vacation or do these kinds of things. And so I've always had that lens. My mom said to me, you can have all the clothes you want as long as you make them. And here's the sewing machine and I will buy the fabric. And I made one year for Christmas, made my brother's 4 button-down shirts. You know, I knew that I had to babysit. I knew that I had to make these clothes. I knew that I had to do these things because we did not have resources for me to do anything other than that. And so I think my work ethic, my insights were developed in part from this big family crisis, but also I had these 4 older brothers that were so interesting. It didn't matter in high school and college that I really didn't have any money because they shared with me what I now call the hidden curriculum. And they told me that I needed to get an internship in New York City and Washington, D.C. And they told me I need to save my waitressing money, get myself to Spain and study Spanish and live with a family and avoid anyone who spoke English. And that's what I did. And so they learned the hard way. Like one of them had gone to Columbia and it took him a very long time to find a job because he didn't get those internships. And so what I see, the reason that I was fortunate to be promoted when I was 26 at Prentice Hall isn't because I was brighter than a lot of the other people, Tim, that were our peers. It was because I had the hidden curriculum and that knowledge and wisdom that came with my brothers. And then I had, you know, 2 parents who, despite their challenges, you know, I knew that they loved me. And I think what I've seen and why I'm so dedicated to first gen to college and to low income students now at this stage of my life is because there's so much talent out there, but those people don't have the parents I had. Even if they're from poor families, they might have parents who are addicted or abused or in jail or whatever. And yet these students have so much ability in the world, but they don't have that access to that hidden curriculum that my brothers provided to me and the support that those brothers provided. So really with Global Minded, we are a network to provide the role models, the mentors, the internships and the jobs to students who don't come from the zip codes where you can go next door and get a summer internship at IBM or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we believe we're not going to have a diverse talent pipeline writ large until we start to level the playing field at these historically Black colleges, at the Hispanic serving institutions, at a lot of colleges that just don't have the resources to either train the teachers or provide the students the kind of curriculum like what's in Keys to Success. And it needs to be all free for those folks. And that's what we are dedicated to working with foundations and funders to make sure that we can scale that for these least resourced students in our country. So that's really how my passion around Global Minded developed. And, you know, I know I kind of skipped a step because I went off and started LifeBound. And
yeah, we'll get to that. You know, don't worry. We won't shortchange LifeBound. Don't worry. But you learned at a very young age, Carol, it sounds like, to use a cliche, you learned at a very young age how to turn lemonade from lemons, didn't you?
I definitely saw that in my parents going through this crisis and my dad being able to restore his health. I know other people whose parents, you know, had a dad like that, took their lives, you know, and that didn't happen in my case. So I saw people deal with major crisis and hang in there and turn it around. And I really attribute that to my parents. And then that became part of the lens that I could see the world through as a problem solver in the world.
Yeah, you are one of a kind. Maybe you are the poster child for success made to last because you're taking your body of experience and now you're turning it into changing lives and to make a significant difference in others. So here's to you, Carol.
Well, thank you so much. And honestly, I don't know that I would have the insight to do Global Minded, but I was diagnosed with lymphoma in 2011, and I went through a couple of years of treatments for that. And I knew that coming out of the other side of that, when I had friends who have not, you know, did not make it through cancer, that I had really this huge responsibility to take every bit of my life to that point and turn it into something really big, serving on a big, big level. And that's that whole cancer experience is what really gave birth to Global Minded. So I think, you know, that's one of the things you realize when these setbacks come up as you go, there's something bigger here. And if you can source the bigger lesson or the bigger opportunity out of what those things are, you will be able to do much more meaningful service on a much broader level.
Absolutely. And I know that you are a person that has an abundance mentality. Tim has told me that
you are
relentlessly positive, which I can tell after knowing you for 15 or 20 minutes. And maybe Denver in our 300 days of sunshine helps that a little bit.
Yes, and growing up in Tucson with a whole lot of sunshine too.
Yeah, I truly believe that's the difference. But what I want to know is, with your platform that you are now working on and rolling out nationally, there are individuals that are born into setbacks and that are already absent of all those possible experiences that you went through that shaped you into the person that you are today. How does your program pull someone up by the bootstraps and take them into this new mindset?
So much of how we do that is through incredible role models of people who have done that. Like, one of our big partners is a man named Mike Hess, and he runs the Blind Institute of Technology. And he's using adaptive technology with Microsoft and Salesforce and all of these tech companies to employ the 80% unemployed visually impaired people. And, you know, he's a leader as a blind person doing that. And so we have so many different people that we hold up as those role models. And, you know, I just saw today one of my friends from the Equity Project, Nita Mosby Tyler, she tweeted that Mattel now has these Barbies that are, you know, bald, and someone's going through cancer, and one's in a wheelchair, and one has a prosthetic limb. And I thought, you know, this is so awesome, because now children will see themselves in these dolls, and they will see those that they love in these dolls, and they will develop a greater sense of compassion and, you know, ability to understand things from all different angles. And so I say the number one way we do that is, Tim can tell you, we have an incredible network of the most amazing humans, and they've overcome lots of different challenges. And when we bring in every June to Denver, we have 100 low-income teenagers and 100 first-generation of college student leaders, and then 800 people, you know, like you and Tim, and people who were first-gen themselves, and they're walking around with a big star on their name tag so the students can see who they are. But it is so many incredible people who have overcome all kinds of different challenges. I mean, one of them is Chanda Hinton, and she's quadriplegic, and she got her master's, started a nonprofit called the Chanda Plan, and she advocates for all these folks that are, you know, quadriplegic and paraplegic, as she is. And she was there, you know, with, you know, in her wheelchair and with her dog, and incredibly talented person. So we have these people that are just such examples for anyone who's facing a challenge, because these people have overcome such incredible challenges.
You know, Carol, I've never had the opportunity to say this to you, but, you know, people listen out to, you know, to podcasts all the time, and they listen to people like you who have inspiring stories and are relentlessly positive and seem almost, you know, bigger than life. And they think to themselves, oh, yeah, right, sure. But I'll tell you a little story. When Kate, for those of you out there, that's my ex-wife, and Kate told me years ago that you had cancer, I looked at her without missing a beat, and I said, if there's anybody in the world that'll beat cancer, it'll be Carol. Don't worry about her. And you attacked that like it was just some other problem, didn't you?
Well, you know what? We looked at it, and I was my husband and I had been married for 1 year, and I did not meet my husband until I was 44, and I did not get married until I was 47. So I will say that to people out there, because a lot of women are like, "Oh my gosh, you know, there's still hope for me." I'm like, "There always is. You know, if you want to find a partner, the person can show up." But we looked at it like, let's just make this a party. And every time we went in there for the treatments, we would bring, you know, bagels, or we would bring a bunch of donuts. And then I would bring a little, like, a little bag with stuff, and I would like set up a little kind of an altar of candle, a picture of my family. And the nurses would just come in my my room, and they'd go, "It's so positive in here. We just want to come in and spend like 5 minutes and re-energize." So let's make the most out of it.
Yes, yes. That's that's an abundance mentality. Well, an abundance, isn't it, Rick? Carol, we didn't get a chance to let you talk about LifeBound and also talk to whatever extent you'd like about Global Minded, because both of those come out of your learnings from writing the books that you wrote and from traveling around and speaking to people and that you do constantly even today. You were just at Davos for some reasons that you can tell us about during the time that we're here. But tell everybody a little bit about LifeBound and its mission and Global Minded and what drives you, what continues to drive you now that you're, I guess, 48 or 49, right?
5'7", senor. Yeah, 5'7". So LifeBound, I started because with the experience with Keys to Success and doing all these trainings at schools from places like Purdue to Baltimore City Community College to Miami-Dade, I started to see the patterns of all the reasons why freshmen struggle and drop out, and that 43% of those who start don't go on to their sophomore year. And I thought, you know, this is really a pipeline issue, and if we could start to deal with the developmental aspects of that from fifth grade to sixth grade to seventh grade to eighth, and then into high school, you have emotional social abilities and issues that need to be developed as early as sixth grade. You have learning abilities that are not equally, you know, provided for depending on whether or not, people are being read to as a child, and the 30 million words that aren't acquired if you grew up in the housing projects, for example. So we started publishing books for 5th through 12th graders to really get more students that age to be self-aware, to appreciate their gifts and abilities, to not just see themselves by the metric of grades and test scores, which I think is one of the main reasons we have so much depression and anxiety out there, that when people see themselves in such a limited way, they can't see all the different things they're capable of. And I was someone, because I did grow up, you know, in kind of a chaotic household, I didn't grow up reading a lot. In fact, Tim, when Lisa Bremmel hired me, I didn't have a high reading score. And Bob Halterreger was like, "I don't know if we should hire this girl." And he was like, "We're hiring this girl." And so I've
And you didn't go to Harvard like Bob, right?
Didn't go to Harvard, and Lisa went to Yale.
Right, right.
But what I realized is that I also care about making the world right for the bad test takers, or for people like me, where I was kind of like a B, you know, kind of a BC student. And now that changed when I got to college. Because I really realized, like, oh my gosh, you know, one of my brothers was like, "You have got to make sure you do well in college." And, you know, he gave me this, you know, this big, you know, talk about that. So LifeBound was really designed to be content that people could use about those different emotional, social, and professional knowledge bases that people need, so that they're not just so narrowly defined by how they take a test. And I know from people we worked with, Tim, we were so lucky to work with the kinds of talented people we worked with at Prentice Hall. We used to call it the Harvard of publishing. These people were amazing. And what you saw is that those people had a real joy in what they were able to come in and do every day. And that place allowed young people like us to do all kinds of things. And really, there was no limit to what we could figure out and go make accomplish at that time. So anyway, that's what LifeBound is about. A few years later, I had gone through coaching training, and I realized, like, oh my gosh, question-based inquiry is how students get to, you know, their gifts, their talents, what inspires them. But if people just talk at them, they are not going to feel very empowered. And so I realized that while the business world used the tool of coaching, a lot of people in academia and K-12 at the time weren't using coaching professionally. they are now, but back then in 2001, it wasn't widespread and it surely wasn't at the college level. So we started a coaching arm and went out and started working with all kinds of colleges, University of New Mexico and Purdue and some of the same colleges that were using the Key Series, to really help them establish a campus-wide culture of coaching where they could co-create, collaborate with students, and learn how to be facilitators. So instead of the telling mold, which is the old school mode, that they really become, you know, people who can be inspiring students through questions that will lead those students to their own answers, not what the old model is, which is it needs to look like this, and I'm the expert telling you that it does look like this. And what we know from talking to employers, and you all know this because you're so dialed into these people, is that students that have grown up being told what to do all the time aren't the ones who anybody wants to hire, because employers want to hire students who can figure things out, have initiative, have their own ideas. Seriously, are the people like Tim that we grew up with in our 20s that have that kind of initiative and wherewithal?
Mm-hmm.
And school sometimes, in the way it's organized by the expert level, hierarchical, can really beat that out of students in ways that make them ineffective in the world of work. So the coaching that we sought to do, and now actually Stephanie Wall is president of LifeBound, and before her it was Allison Pendergast. Allison is now in charge of digital learning for Bill and Melinda Gates and has moved to Washington, D.C. So we're working kind of with her from a whole different lens now. I'm super proud of her. She was somebody that used to report to me, and she's first gen to college and Army ROTC and just an incredible person. But Stephanie Wall, you know, and it's been really great working with Stephanie while I've, moved into Global Minded. So that's really LifeBound. It's how do you improve that entire pipeline? How do you shore up those leaks on the pipeline? How do you help people with the emotional, social, professional that K-12 and sometimes colleges are just not that adept at when they're so academically focused at the expense of the other things that students need to feel balanced and empowered and fruitful and capable in the world of work?
And Global Minded, did you get enough time to talk about that, Carol, when you segued to that before? Do you want to add to that? Because I think that what you're doing there is, you know, is messianic work, really.
Well, I will add to that because I feel like it is a culmination of all these different threads of purpose in my life, all within the Global Minded bucket, because I feel like that's another area where there's like no limits to what can be accomplished with that vehicle. And Global Minded is about creating a capable, diverse talent pipeline to get more women, more people of color, more underrepresented, ability status, LGBTQ, neurodiverse, however you can define diversity. And Tim, you know this, and the reason I'm so passionate about this is that, you know, when I was 26, I was the one lone female, you know, at that assistant vice president level. And
yeah,
so
that's right. You know, you forget that in retrospect, but you're right about that now that you mention it. Yep.
So yeah. So I was an outlier.
Yep.
I relate to outliers, whether it's a person of color as the only person of color, or it's the, person with a ability status issue as the only person in the wheelchair, whatever it is. I really relate to that. And that is part of why I'm so passionate about working with, there's a lot of amazing, I'll just say, Caucasian men who are leading in incredible ways. And then there's a lot of men who want to open doors for women and underrepresented people of color, and they don't exactly know what to do. So we have a multi-pronged strategy for closing the equity gap. And part of that strategy involves first generation of college and low income students. And that involves getting them the hidden curriculum and the training, those who work with them. Another strategy is we have these inclusive leader awards across 14 industry sectors because there are amazing people that are doing this work, but probably the two of you cannot name who these people are, but you can name all the bad actors because they're the ones in the news all the time. So our thought is we have these inclusive leader awards. They're like the Academy Awards for Diversity and Inclusion. And within a couple of years, we want these people to be household names the way sports stars and movie stars are household names, because we won't have diverse corporate and government and foundations and funders until this leadership is really unmasked. And right now, a lot of it's hidden. So that's one of our goals. And with those industry partners, we've been able to help them understand issues of low-income students, issues of first-gen, and get them to make a commitment to hire half first-gen as apprentices or as interns and half as graduates. Because right now in our country, only 11% of first-generation to college graduate from college. And that is just an atrocity. Because even if you beat the odds and you're one of those 11%, you're not necessarily going into jobs like Tim and I had, which our promotion pathway jobs.
So those are
some of the things that we really seek to knit together. And then the final bucket is the bucket of educators, that a lot of education is still super hierarchical. I learned, I was researching how many women and people of color are superintendents. There's like 13,800 superintendents out there, and there's 1,984 women, and 72% of women are in K-12. So, you know, you start to look at these different things, and then colleges, there's like 17% people of color are college presidents. 30% college presidents are women. But when you start to look at these different things, you go, this is where we have the work to do, and this is how we can knit together these different groups. And then I just said that was the final thing. It's not the final thing. The final piece is that there's funding. There's foundations and funders. And not a lot of foundations and funders have the diversity that they need to be truly inclusive and to be funding the sustainable development goals, to be funding climate restoration, to be funding low-income students and their needs. And we are a vehicle for those folks. So yesterday I just had a planning call with Lawrence Ford from Conscious Capital, and they're going to do a pre-conference before Global Minded on June 6th this year before the dinner. And they're bringing in, you know, 100 of the most inclusive funders who can learn from each other on how they can be moving billions to really get at these issues. So we know that if we don't start to make that capital more diverse, we could be doing things all day long for first gen, and it would not be opening the big doors the way, you know, Tim, you and I had those doors open to be able to do all kinds of things professionally. And all of these incredibly talented, diverse students need to have those same opportunities. And you know this too, that Harvard Business School is one of our partners. Their companies are so seeking this diverse talent, but since colleges are so flat-footed at graduating this talent, they're not getting it. So we are building that direct bridge.
Wow. Rick and I were just trading signs and hand signals, and Rick is so kept looking at me saying, wow. But I told you, Rick, she's remarkable. What I also appreciate a lot from what you told us during the course of this interview, Carol, is, you know, people listen to people who have done great things on podcasts or see them on TV, and they see the finished product, you know, and the finished product looks, well, pretty damn finished, and they think to themselves, oh, I can't do that. I'm very happy that you talked about, you know, your childhood. You know, we all had one, and they all weren't perfect, were they? And
right.
And we many people carry their imperfections of their childhood and allow them to be to yoke them in their adulthood, and you didn't do that. What you decided to take is what you considered your imperfections and to turn them, as I said earlier, into lemonade. So, you know, that's an abundance mentality. That's what makes people successful, however you want to define that. And I guess maybe my closing question to you, Carol, is, you know, as you think about the word success made to last and the phrase success made to last, I meant to say, or creating a life that matters, what does all that mean to you? Although I think myself and the audience probably already knows.
Well, I'll tell you, we have a bold goal for Global Minded, and this is how I would define success made to last, that we have this goal that by 2025, and I'd love to accomplish this through and with your listeners and also the other, you know, amazing people that you guys have in your circle that you feature.
Mm-hmm.
But our bold goal is by 2025, we want to have 25 million first-gen students, first-gen graduates, those who work with them, and those who want to hire them, algorithmically connected for role models, mentors, internships, and jobs. And we know that if you know, eHarmony can be doing that with matching people on careers, we can surely be doing that with students who, you know, you're a Latina from El Paso and you go to work at Google and you don't see someone who looks like you. But through our network, we match you with Patty Lopez from Intel, who's a PhD in computer science, and she's also from El Paso. That's really, you know, we would like to see that grow with technology algorithmically so that we are reaching these people at scale and matching them with incredible people like you all who, you know, can mentor them and inspire them so that they not only create great things in their lives, but they really become servant leaders and they're opening doors for a lot of other people around the issues that they most care about.
Well, Carol, that sounds pretty good to me, by the way. Rick
well,
is once again saying,
you,
wow.
I recruit you guys to help us achieve that.
Well, we can
you
do
guys
that,
have
yes.
A serious
yes.
network.
Well, we do have a pretty good network. And speaking of which, Carol, why don't you tell people where they can find out about LifeBound and Global Minded, and particularly in the case of Global Minded, if I may speak for you, if you're out there listening to this and you're in a foundation or you're in some kind of charitable organization or you just have extra money that you don't need, you know, how you can help Carol finance the work that she does at Global Minded. But tell us about where people can learn about that stuff, Carol.
Absolutely. So it's Global Mind, M-I-D-E, and then ED.org, globalminded.org. And one of the things that we're looking for right now to manifest is we want $5 million from JPMorgan Chase or Bank of America or whoever's willing to write this check. Because we want to take our hidden curriculum, Tim, I just got all the rights to the keys
yes,
material.
Yes.
And we want to take that to the 15 colleges for our first year, scale to 70 colleges in the second year, and to 200 colleges in the third year, train and work with 200,000 students and 20,000 faculty around these issues of personal, professional, internship, and early job success. And we know if we can do that in the least resource schools, we'll be able to do that, scale it around the country with any first gen. So we'd love to have you join us. Our event is annually, but it's June 6th through the 8th in Denver. Tim's been a part of this. We'll have 1,100 leaders. We'll have Inclusive Leaders Dinner as the opening that night, and a couple hundred of these amazing students, and then all of these businesses that really are prioritizing diversity with legislators, people who are foundations and funders, other folks as well. So we'll have that. And then for LifeBound, that's LifeBound, LifeBound.com. And that phone number is 303-327-5688. We're actually in an old Victorian, so they're upstairs and we're downstairs, and based in Denver, but we work nationally and globally. And that's, I'll tell you real quickly, Davos, I went with our partners, the Female Quotient, and they are one of the biggest gender equity movers and shakers. Shelley Zykos is the woman who founded that. And then the climate restoration folks, we met through the UN. They're one of our partners. And the International Labor Organization, they are involved. The Canadian Consul General is one of our partners, and they were there. So, and then there was something out of Colorado called the Learning Economy and the C-Lab. They had an event at the University ETH last week, a week ago today. And then another colleague launched something, two colleagues, Navroop Sadev and Heidi Kapari, something called the Digital Economy. And that was a week ago Thursday. So there ended up, I went kind of for one purpose, and then it ended up being five other synergistic things through partners happening there. So we're looking forward to welcoming a lot of the people that we met there to Denver in June as well.
Well, Carol, nothing you do surprises me anymore, but it is remarkable, isn't it? A kid from Tucson who entered Prentice Hall, and then she's speaking at Davos and hobnobbing with the people run the universe. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you're so funny. You know what? But I just have to say that back in the day when we were all together and we were in our 20s, it was hard for people sometimes to even understand what I was talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I understand
you know what I mean?
That.
And I want
yes,
to say that
absolutely.
People, that you can be the village idiot
yep.
until your stuff starts to have traction. But don't be surprised, anyone who's listening, if you have some of these out there visions of things you can do and other people around you do not understand what you're doing. Because I think you just have to go, they don't understand, and that's fine, and I'm still going to do it.
You are
because
so...
that's what I think, even the Keys series. I don't have a master's degree. That became the bestseller in an academic environment where PhDs use that series.
No, you're absolutely right, Carol. That's tremendous advice. Tremendous advice for anybody at any age, but certainly, you know, someone in their 20s that you might not just be crazy. You might just be ahead of your time.
That's right. Hey, Carol, just a comment in closing on this show. I've interviewed thousands of people, but you are in this class of your own of having transcended Aww. From success to significance. So I encourage you to keep up the work and to be this agent of change.
Well, I would love to, and I'm just going to tell you, I'm partnering with you all to achieve some of these bigger goals. So you can count on that, and Tim will tell you that will be happening, right, Tim?
Oh, yes. She's got her teeth sunk into you already, Rick. I'm just going to move back because I've seen her in practice, and there's no stopping her. She said there's going to be 25 million people doing whatever she said earlier they're going to be doing. It'll be 50, and it'll be 50 million, and it'll happen before 2025. I have watched this for 30 years. I have seen this movie before. Carol, listen, you know, you're a modest person at heart, but you should be very, very proud of what you've accomplished over the years. And I just want to tell you that I'm really happy and proud that you came on the show because people out there are going to listen to this, and they're going to go, wow, I mean, this is Oprah-level stuff that you just gave us for the last 40 minutes. And I know that you know that you do good work, but it's always great to hear other people say it, isn't it?
Well, it's wonderful. It's an honor to be with you all because I know the other kinds of caliber of people you guys have on the show. And also, I just think it's a great way for us to better understand what we're doing so we can collaborate more to create more significance, you know, with each other from these different vantage points. So I appreciate the ability to do that, you know, through your listeners and through both of you. So I very much look forward to that. And Rick, we're going to see you and Tim June 6th through the 8th. So you just keep those dates on your dance card and you're going to see this magic in person.
That's great. Thanks again, Carol. We appreciate you being on
All
today's
right.
Success Made to Last
Thank
show. And
you so much.
We'll have Carol's show posted on our website, successmadetolast.com. And until next time, we invite you all back to listen to our show and remember to create a life that matters. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.